Stick a pony in my pocket. I'll fetch the suitcase from the van. Cause if you want the best, instead you don't ask questions, then brother, I'm your man. Cause where it all comes from is a mystery. It's like the changing of the seasons or the tides of the sea. But he's the one that's driving me berserk. Why do only fools and horses work? La 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 la. La 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 la.
Sorry.
Bonjour, everybody.
Ahoy there.
Bon bouche to you.
Chateau Neuf du Pape.
Welcome to the Jolly Boys podcast, episode 3. Today we are discussing
Go West, Young Man. We're a bit giddy because we've had a...
Well, I was about to say, guess what, guys?
What's happened?
What's happening, James?
We've only gone and got a guest later on today.
You're pulling my leg!
The lovely... well, you all know, we've all just interviewed her, but we're recording this now. Sue Holdness.
Woohoo! Oh,
came on, wow, aka was... Marlene Boyce. She was an absolute darling, wasn't she?
Really,
she was
really lovely lady. It's just so nice of her to give us time of day or time of evening.
Yeah.
It was really good.
But we've got a good episode today as well. We've got another quiz. Hopefully that'll go well. We've taken all of your feedback and we've ignored a lot of it. And we've actually bought a new microphone. So hopefully the sound quality is a lot better. If not, I don't want to hear any moaning. It's 40 quid that cost me.
I just, on record, of saying episode 3, it's almost like starting afresh because it's just Go West, Young Man. We are going to talk about Go West, Young Man as an episode. And any observations around the episode, favourite bits, and then there'll be a quiz. And probably other bits surrounding it.
Forget everything we've done in the first two episodes, basically.
Pretty much.
If anything, delete it from your devices.
Yeah, delete it and start again and re-download it, because then we do get the figures for that.
Resubscribe, re-like, yeah. 5 stars.
And re-rate.
Yeah, thank
but
you.
Can you, the person who rated us 2 stars, please change that to 5?
Yeah, very much appreciated. Thank you very much.
If you do want to get in touch with us or get involved in the podcast, tweet us at @OFA_podcast. Or email us theofapodcast@gmail.com. We've got various individual accounts. Trigger, Slater, Denzel.
Stephen.
Guys like me and Stephen.
Lennox Gilby.
Yeah, and also we should give a bit of a shout out to Andrew Duthie, who emailed us with some really, really lovely email.
Mm-hmm.
And gave us a link to his blog. I've had a read, it's a good read. ofa.net/blog, why I love Only Fools and Horses. Thank you, Andrew, for your email.
Yeah, thanks, man. Much appreciated.
Again, delete though and resubscribe. And rate, because that'd be really helpful to us.
I'm a massive fan of the earlier episodes of Only Fools and Horses, like I mentioned in the last podcast.
One thing I've got an eye for looking at the earlier episodes is the props in the flat. I like looking at the furniture, how it changes from episode to episode. I think John Sullivan touches on that he wanted to make a point of changing the furniture and the pictures from episode to episode. As a typical Del Boy character, you know, if you walk into his flat and you want to buy something, it'd offer it for you for a tenner. So sometimes I'm completely oblivious to what they're talking about and I'm just looking around the flat. I really do enjoy looking at the props of the earlier episodes. Some of the episodes that it's most famous for is the late 90s. You know, it's a different generation in a sense. So the audience at this point is still working the characters out. Whereas in the later episodes, you kind of know how they're going to react to certain things and Del Boy's classic quotes and how, you know, Rodney's going to react to Del's ridiculous ideas in business.
This episode marks the first time you ever hear Rodney talk of his fantasy for women in uniforms. I'm led to believe.
And his trousers have never been higher.
Yeah,
that's the truth.
So Go West, Young Man. So ultimately, this is, who wants to talk about the synopsis there? What happens in Go West, Young Man? The little breakdown.
Dan and Rodney are once again hunting for bargains, and after stopping off at Boise's car lot, they spy a Mark II Cortina they would like to buy, they part exchange it for a Vanden Plas. Dell knocks down asking price of 25 quid. As long as he has his Boise's E-Type Jag for a week, which I think he's got for his bit on the side, hasn't he? He's bought it as a present, which is actually unlike Boise. When you look in at his later episodes, he's almost quite tight with his money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know it's sort of, they allude to sort of various, you know, women in Sheffield. Sheffield, get that phone! later on in the series, it's quite unlike him to buy an E-type jack. Dale then does up the car a little bit. When I say does up, he probably gets Rodney to clean it. And he tries to sell it for £199. He generates, there's some interest from an Australian guy called...
Nick Stringer.
Yeah, Nick Stringer.
Your shock absorber's gone.
Well, it has now.
What's it like?
What's what like?
The car, you dingo. What do you think I'm talking about, your flaming coffee?
The car? Oh, well, you know, it's
a bit overpriced.
It's a bit overpriced, yeah, that's what I was going to say.
It says 23,000 on the clock. Is that genuine?
Well, the last time I looked, it was over...
22,500. Quite right, Rodney. No, I had the RSE do a 500-mile road test on it. Well, you know, better safe than sorry. That's what I always say. It's beautiful, though, isn't it, eh?
Beautiful. What do you think? Sonnet Lumiere, wouldn't you say?
Well, if I go quite that far.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at this, eh? Genuine leather upholstery, there. Where would you find genuine leather upholstery like that these days, eh?
Do you know that the East African gazelle became an endangered species for this model?
Sacrifice well made, I'd say, wouldn't you? No, it's an enthusiast model, this one, and I can see that you are, in fact, a genuine enthusiast.
Don't give me that crap, mate. I can make up my own mind. And I don't need any help from no Cockney villain.
Cockney villain? Cockney villain? Oh, there's no need to be like that, sir. I mean, after all, the British and the Australians are cousins across the sea, aren't they? I mean, if your great-granddad hadn't been a bloody villain, you could have been one of us. Say, lovey, Sam Ferriand. Allow me to point out some of the optional extras on this one, sir. Look at that. The anti-dazzle mirror in here. You'll notice that we got the old, look at that, the one-speed wiper. And we've got... Oh, yeah. Perfect example of the sporting tourer. And, of course, it comes complete with a full 2 weeks MOT still left to run.
How many owners?
How many owners? I'm glad you asked me that, sir, because it's only had the one owner from new, and that, of course, was a vicar.
A vicar?
Vicar. A vicar. Used to use it to drive backwards and forwards to church on a Sunday, that was all.
And, oh, look at it.
I only left his Bible in the glove compartment.
Yeah, he's quite a feisty character in this, wasn't he? Don't give me that crap, mate.
He could have made a good impact in general in the series, I think. He could have been a really quite an interesting character.
Yeah.
But without him, we wouldn't have had Jumbo Mills.
And that's going to say, I would prefer Jumbo Mills. I think, he starred in obviously just the one episode as Jumbo. I think Jumbo Mills could have been made one of the Nags Head regulars. It would have worked well.
Oh, yeah. Then he could have still played this character. Dale would have sold him a car. He sells anyone anything, doesn't he? But apparently when Rodney... tears around the corner in the Cortina. Apparently, he'd only just passed his driving test.
It looked like it. So that's real driving, then.
Yeah.
Mella, brakes a bit spongy, are they?
What bloody brakes? I nearly killed myself, Del. It's a death trap.
What do you expect for 25 quid?
Absolutely classic. But then he's handing out the money to Grandad and Rodney afterwards. And Rodney's already quite conscientious and probably thinks, well, you shouldn't be doing that. It's not how we want to do things. And he's quite ethical, but he still takes the money. And I think Rodney hates himself for that. He's been battened down and he can't get another job. And he wants to go out on his own and do stuff. But Delboy's in the flat, counts out the money and distributing it. And as he's distributing it, he comes up with this poem. Have you heard of the poem before?
It's a classic quote that the Australians use for us yuppies, I guess, as they call us over here. Don't quote me. I could be wrong there, but it goes back a long way. It's got quite some history. And it goes a little something like this.
As I was walking through Earl's Court into a pub I lured, where a nosy pom said, "Where you from?" as I downed the amber fluid. I said, "Get it straight, I'm an Aussie, mate, and I'm fixed to get blasted. But the beer is crook and the birds all look like you, you pommy grandad."
Dale and Rodney decide to have a bit of a night out on the town. And they try. I think Rodney's idea to impress the birds by taking the E-type up the... at the West End, and they don't have so much luck in their first bar, but then they meet a couple of couple of sorts in another bar.
They arrive at the club. Obviously, Rodney doesn't realise that essentially it's... What kind of club would you describe it? It wasn't necessarily a gay club, was it? It was just, they just happened to...
I don't think he really specifies. I think it's just... I don't know. Is it just a normal club?
I don't know. I have to watch the scene back. I've not noticed any women in the scene, but I wasn't paying attention. Maybe we should all take a look.
I guess the waiter was, well, you don't assume he was gay, but he...
Camp, I think is the word. Yeah, he was quite camp, and Dell didn't take too much to his personality, did he?
A nice little foreshadowing here. And I didn't ever pick up on this, but when they're in this episode, in the club, talking to Nicky and Michelle, they're pretending that they're a tennis player and tennis coach, but that foreshadows a nice moment in Miami Twice when they're both playing tennis. So I didn't think of that myself. I read that up, but whether that's done on purpose, probably not, because 1981 to 1991, a whole 10 years difference. I don't think John Sullivan would have done that just for that purpose. But
you wouldn't put it past him, though, would you?
You wouldn't put it past him. There's probably a few more foreshadowing moments in the early series that happen later on. I'm sure, hopefully, our listeners will tweet in or put a comment on our Facebook page and tell us gladly.
In the episode Go West, Young Man, I think Dell and Rodney do really well to find two women as attractive as the two that they found, considering they don't do too well in previous episodes. And, avoiding the gruesome twosomes.
Yeah, if anything, it's going too well. And you think, you know, how is this going to go wrong? Something surely is going to upset the scene, and they're chatting up with these two rather nice ladies, and you're just on tenterhooks waiting to see what happens exactly.
Also, we thought it might be an idea to give him some practice on grass, you see, because over in the States they use that stuff called AstroTurf.
What do you prefer, Rodney? What do you prefer, AstroTurf or grass?
Oh, I don't know. I never smoked AstroTurf.
Nicky and Michelle, played by Joanne Good and Caroline Ellis, they were at last year's convention. And Joanne Good did a nice little video, didn't she, of the morning leading up to the convention.
Oh, yeah, I remember seeing it.
It's quite a nice little insight. If any of you listeners went to the convention this year in Hull, I'd love to hear your experience.
You got the double whammy at the end. Dell and Rodney are in the car on the way home in the E-Type Jag. Does Dale ask Rodney to light up a cigar for him or a cigarette for him or something?
Yes, yeah, he does. Yeah.
And he takes a cigar and Rodney throws the packet, which again is actually unlike Rodney because he's quite environmental, isn't he,
yeah,
in later episodes.
Do we see Rodney throw the packet?
You don't see him throw it, do you?
No, there's a it's a debate that he does actually throw it. A lot of people think he does throw it.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Okay, so then Rodney then realises that the number's gone. Dale Boy slams on the brakes. And then a car crashed into the back of him. And who was in that car?
Sorry, mate, the brakes on this thing are... Well, I don't know what he says, but...
Bit dicky.
Yeah, dicky.
Yeah, a bit dicky.
But he sort of hides his face to sort of build the suspense. But I think everyone gets it quite soon before there's a sort of reveal.
You know, we were saying Boise's quite friendly in this episode. Perhaps that's what led Boise to start to begrudge Dale, because that was the beginning of his E-type drag that would cost him thousands. It's just been smashed up by Dale.
Well, what can Boise do, though? He can't do anything, can he?
Because... Well, no, he can't, because he's brought it for his bit on the side. But ultimately, he's quite sort of straight and friendly with Dale in this episode. Then the next episode he appears in, he's a little bit more hard-faced with him.
Do you think this is almost in the back of the mind of Boise when he's sort of... Well, I don't really want to go into later episodes, but he's quite hard on Dale. You know, when... losing streak, he's taking the money, he's happy to take, even if he knows it's his last 400 quid, for example. Do you think this is in the back of mind? Maybe it's meant to be subconsciously about the car being written off?
Possibly. I think it's all a build-up, isn't it? But I think the thing is with the two characters, Dell and Boise, they're both very competitive. And it's like a cat and mouse game, it feels, throughout the whole of the Only Fools and Horses series.
So what do you rate this episode out of 10 then, boys, for overall, you know, hilarity?
I really enjoy the episode. I think the comedy comes very naturally, so I'm going to give it a strong 8 out of 10. But then again, I am a fan of the earlier episodes of Only Fools and Horses. How do you feel about it, Ed?
Yeah, it's not my favourite episode, but it's definitely an important one. It's where the audience are starting to get to know the characters and start predict how they're going to react in certain situations. So I'll give it a 7 myself.
Very generous of you boys. Every episode is great, but for me, it's probably a 4 or 5. Not to say it's not funny, but
4.
If you compare this to, you know, one of the specials, you know, that's how I'm measuring it.
You pranny.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the Jolly Boys podcast, Sue Holdness, aka Marlene. Good evening, Sue. How are you?
Good evening, all of you. How exciting this is to talk to all four of you tonight.
Very exciting. Thank you so much for coming on. We've just got a few questions for you.
Hi, Sue. This is Bailey. Thank you so much for giving up your time for the podcast. We really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, Bailey. Now, what's your first question? Throw it at me.
My first question is, how did you land the role of Marlene, and were there any other actresses that auditioned for the part?
Well, no, I was lucky, really, because nobody else was offered the part. Marlene wasn't really supposed to appear. They didn't want her. They wanted Marlene to be a sort of her indoor character, a bit like the George Cole character in Minder. But John Sullivan suddenly had this idea for the boys, Dale and Rodney, would look after a dog. He couldn't think where this wretched dog was going to come from. And so he suddenly said, well, I suppose we could see Marlene. We don't have to see her for long. We'll just, boys, you can give Marlene a dog. We'll show that and then get rid of her. So they didn't pay too much attention to the casting. And Ray Butt had seen me, funnily enough, he'd seen me doing a one-woman play about Myra Hindley, which is an odd, let's face it, character.
Yeah, absolutely.
Leading to Marlene. And also in a series called End of Part One. So the Myra Hindley character was Yorkshire. In the End of Part One, I was doing all sorts of different things. So I think they assumed I could do it. So I didn't meet anybody, didn't talk to anybody. They just offered me the part, which was fantastic because I bowled up. I was 3 months pregnant with my first child.
Wow, that's amazing.
What work was going to be around. And I rolled up and met all of these three nice actors who I'd never met before and had this fantastic little part. It was a very short scene where Marlene first meets the boys and then I go into the house and I bring out this huge dog and they're expecting a puppy. And I do lots of kissing of Duke and a bit of kissing of Del Boy. And off we go. And that was supposed to be all that was ever going to happen for Marlene. But obviously, John Sullivan liked the role and liked what I did with it. And rang me up at home a couple of weeks later and said, Marlene will be back. Hallelujah.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah, we're glad you was as well.
Played the role so brilliantly. So really, really brilliantly.
It was just sheer luck that I, as soon as I read the script, I just heard her voice. I knew exactly what she was like. I understood her completely. And, I really did think that was all it was going to be. I thought, you know, what a great day out. Fun it was. Pity it's only one day, but hey, nice job.
I felt that Marlene was the character that sort of developed itself more naturally than a lot of the other characters. It was just from the very first episode you appeared in. It seems
She just was sort of there, wasn't she? Yeah. This terrible old tart with a heart, who'd sort of been round the block and back. And now I love playing her because at that point in my life I was playing rather posh birds, you know, double-barreled prime minister's PAs. So suddenly to get this lovely Cockney tart was a great joy.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Well, ready for the next question, if you are.
Yeah, sure. Yeah? Throw me another one.
This is Tom speaking, by the way.
Hello, Tom.
Hello. So, what was your favourite moment in the show? What made it so special for you?
Well, do you know, I think that it was that first episode because I just learned to love her. From the moment I came running out of the house with that huge fur coat and too much makeup and that gorgeous dog, that was, it never got better than that. I mean, I loved all of it, but that the next best, most thrilling, you know, heart-stopping moment was, in fact, at the end when John Sullivan said that he'd got this idea for a spin-off series. And Boysie and Marlene got their wonderful green grass. Because, you know, Marlene appeared very little in Any Fools and Horses. Every time a script arrived, my heart would sink when I realised I was only in it for 2 seconds. Yeah. So suddenly when we got green grass and I knew that I was going to be in every episode and have quite a lot of stuff to do, that was the next really exciting thing. But I don't think it ever got better than that first moment when I just got the chance to get my teeth into this wonderful little character. I adored her.
Was there a particular episode of the show you'd like to have been involved in?
Oh, I suppose of all of them, the one that I think was the funniest episode of the lot. Well, I mean, there's so many, aren't there? It's difficult to tell. But the one that made me laugh the most, I think, was the blow up dolls. Mm. I still think it is that every time those dolls just appear.
We agree, Steve.
Yeah, definitely.
Danger UXT, fantastic.
It was a glorious idea, wasn't it?
It's fantastic.
And you know, it was quite difficult to find those dolls because those blow up dolls are really usually rather naughty items for the sex industry. So they had to have 12. Made that
oh, really?
Rude.
Lusty Linda and Erotic Estelle, if I recall.
Yeah. Where are they now, Sue?
I mean, it would have been nice to be around when they were shooting that, because I believe an awful lot of giggling went on.
I imagine so, yeah. It would have been hard to keep a straight face during that.
Yeah, it's very difficult. I'm a very bad giggler. It would have been hopeless for me, but I'd still like to have been there.
Hi, Sue. It's Ed here, lifetime Only Fools and Horses fan. I have to ask, one of the most adored scenes for me in Only Fools and Horses is when Rodney gets married and Del is in that scene in the pub listening to Holding Back the Years. I have to ask, was it emotional for you watching that scene backstage or even now when you watch it back on TV?
Yeah, funnily enough, I could have used this answer for the last question because that was one of my most favourite scenes, because Del Boy gets to sort of pour his heart out to Marlene. Everybody, you know, we all were sobbing with the playing of that wonderful music and Rodney going away. And then when Marlene goes and has a little chat with him, says, "Why did you never get married, Del?" And Del pours his heart out about how, you know, he'd been engaged to lots of girls. He was engaged to Marlene. And he never married any of them because he said, you know, they didn't want to look after Rodney. So it's family, isn't it? And that little speech that he gives to Marlene about why he hasn't actually settled down and how much Rodney has always meant to him, I thought was terribly touching and being part of that. And it was also quite nice because it showed the relationship that Marlene and Del had, which was obviously very sexy and naughty, but also very tender. He's very fond of her and she's very fond of him. Yeah. Because I think it's nice that you brought up that scene because it is one of my favourites.
Yeah. I mean, as you mentioned earlier, one of the most famous relationships that you have on screen is actually with Juki, the Great Dane. I have to ask, was he a nightmare off stage? And were there many outtakes during the scenes?
Oh, God, this is going to upset your listeners terribly.
Oh.
Three dukes died.
Never knew that.
Dukes.
That's exclusive.
Great Danes, they don't live for very long time, and the series went on and on. So he had four different dukes, and they all had very different personalities. The first one was a really nice, soppy dog. He was sweet. Well, I had to sort of slobber over and kiss a lot. He had terribly bad breath, but he was a nice dog. But then there was another one. I think he was the third duke. Might have been the second. But he was absolutely obsessed by the boom. Now, I don't know if you know, but they know the boom is the big microphone.
Okay,
it is held near the actor's mouth, out of shot. And sometimes the boom has to go under, so it's quite low on the ground. And it's a big thing. It's about 12 inches long and rather furry. And one of the dukes just loved this thing. And as soon as he saw it, he attacked it. So he did lose a lot of takes for this potty dog, who for some reason thought that this was some sort of animal that he should be mangling. So he was the most awkward. And there was another one who was lazy. When he was supposed to do something a bit vigorous, he refused. Oh, and there was another one. One of the dukes absolutely passionately loved Rodney.
Oh, really?
You'll notice one of the episodes where Rodney's supposed to be, Del's trying to sell them a baby and Rodney's out in the garden. He's supposed to be playing Duke. And Duke jumped up on Rodney and kept pushing him down. And, I mean, he did really sexually try to assault Rodney.
Well, I think that adds to the comedy.
The crew were appalling because poor Nicholas was flat on the floor with a huge dog on top of him, and nobody shouted cut because the crew were all in absolute hysteria.
Oh, I'm enjoying it too much, Sue.
It looked terrifying. As a young child watching, I looked terrified at that huge dog attacking a tall man.
It was quite funny. It did make everybody laugh.
But they say never work with children or animals, Sue.
I know, and John Sullivan constantly wrote scenes for me, either with a child or an animal. In fact, I did an episode of two episodes of Dear John, his other series,
yeah,
in which he gave me five children.
Oh my word!
So
wow.
I think he had something against.
Yeah, I think he's trying to tell you something, Sue. besides from John Challis, are there any other cast members that you stay in touch with?
Well, the nice thing about the Only Fools and Horses Appreciation Society is it gets us all together every year. We have convention, which we just had last weekend, which was good fun. And there were lots of actors there on the Saturday and the Sunday. He does a good lineup. David and Nick never go to those things. And because they never go, it's a sort of vicious circle, because if they did go, they'd be mobbed.
Yeah, absolutely.
They will never, I don't think, ever appear at the conventions, which is sad. And but a lot of actors have got to meet David and Nick over the years. I personally don't bump into them unless it's for, you know, funerals or award ceremonies. And sadly, more funerals than I normally would care for.
Yes, it's always a way. Very sad.
Recently, my path has crossed David's, because I've gone into Still Open All Hours, and it was
absolutely all that, yeah,
working with him again.
Mrs. Rossi, how's that going?
Mrs. Rossi, yes, she's just appeared. Well, she's appeared very briefly at the moment, but all my scenes were with David, and it was very lovely to be back together again, and he said how nice it was. But, we don't meet socially because everybody's sort of too busy.
Yeah, of course.
I meet socially with John Challis all the time. He's constantly here. I can't get rid of
him. John is absolutely lovely. We've met him multiple times.
Here at the weekend with his wife. No, we all get on very well. John and his wife and I and my husband go on holidays together, and we're good chums, which is lucky, because many double acts hate each other, don't they?
Of course, yeah. Well, we'd love to have John Challis on sometime. So you put in a good word for us, Sue, if that's okay with you.
When I see him on Sunday, I'll tell him.
I'll give him an elbow in the ribs from us.
I will.
So is there any modern comedies you quite like? Or are there all the classics been and gone?
I don't know. I love all the classics, obviously, that everybody else mentions. And in the old days, in the 70s and the 80s, the people wrote for families, particularly John Sullivan's stuff. You know, he wanted every age group to be able to watch them. But, you know, there are modern comedies I like. I think Ab Fab's wonderful. Mm. I liked Gavin and Stacey. And there aren't very many where you can genuinely say this is family entertainment. I mean, a lot are aimed at sort of 20s or 30s. And there's lots of good stuff for kids. But the genius, I think, are those writers like, the Fawlty Towers, of course.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Scripts, aren't they?
Yeah.
But the really funny comedies that are genuinely fascinating to every age group, I think, are fewer and further between now. John Sullivan was the master, of course, wasn't he?
Agreed.
Of course, yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of sort of Dad's Army and Hancock's Half Hour and all that sort of era, but you don't get that anymore.
And of course, you know, you had Birds of a Feather came back. I thought that was a good show and came back again. But then they had the original cast members for the return.
Yeah.
I loved Blackadder. And Just Good Friends, which came before Only Fools, with John Sullivan. It was written by John Sullivan. And that was a very sweet, gentle comedy too. I loved it.
I have another question on the topic of comedies making a return. The year John Sullivan sadly passed, he'd had a script, or he was preparing a script for a 30-year anniversary.
Yes.
Are you aware of, did you ever get to see any part of the script? If so,
no, I don't know if anybody has. It's so tragic, because it had been agreed. It had been, you know, all the availabilities of the actors had been done, the writer and the producers and everybody, David and Nick, that's the most important thing, had agreed. But it was going to be celebrating Del becoming a pensioner, and Rodney was going to throw him a party. It would have been fantastic fun to do.
Yeah.
But of course, the tragic loss of John Sullivan meant that it didn't happen, and of course now won't ever happen.
Yeah, because
I don't think anybody would want to do it again without John being around to sprinkle his gold dust on it.
It's a tragic. I mean, with regards to the main character, Del and Rodney, I love, but all this, the great thing about Only Fools and Horses, all the surrounding characters are just as loved, especially amongst the core fans. You know,
yes,
boys see Marnie
and
are as
the
important.
Fans are very sweet and do love everybody. Unfortunately, there aren't very many of us left. But those of us who are left, we would, if approached, I think we would all say, don't do it without John. No, let's have the wonderful memory of
absolutely
what it was like in its heyday.
Absolutely. We totally agree. And Sue, thank you so much for coming on. It's been an absolute honour to have you on our podcast.
Well, thank you, Sue. I'm very touched that you should want to talk to me.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'd have you again, you know,
in a heartbeat, Sue.
We could ask a million more questions, but we don't take it any more time. Yeah.
I think we're all going to be pinching ourselves for the rest of the evening that we've spoken to you.
You're very sweet. Anyway, I think it's good fun to talk to you, and I'm happy to say that I will be coming into the next series of Still Open All Hours. It's
yes,
not the same as Only Fools, but that's what's going to happen to me next year after my pantomime in Mansfield, which is Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. Please mention that.
Absolutely, yeah, we will. We'll be plugging that. Absolutely,
we'll put a link on our Twitter page and everything too. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, thanks, Sue. Have a nice weekend.
Bonjour.
Thank you.
Bonjour.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Eyes down for a full house and we're off and running.
We take your feedback on board, listeners. We're shortening the quiz to 5 questions. So, Bailey leads 1-0 in the series. Let's hear the buzzers. James, let's hear yours.
You're Emma. Love you.
Bailey?
And that was you.
And Ed?
Sorry, Delmar.
Fantastic. The same ones from the first episode, but we've re-recorded them. They should sound a little bit more crisp. Now, the only rules of this quiz are the first person to buzz in gets to answer. If they get it wrong, it's handed over. Okay?
Right. Come on then.
Question one. What is the make of the car Del Boy buys from Boise? And for a bonus point, how many miles has it allegedly done? So what's the make? So I heard James's buzzer.
Cortina.
Yeah.
And has it done 25,000?
How much has it allegedly done?
25,000?
It's 88,000.
Okay.
All right, so you get a point. Question two. How much does Del Boy the car for, and how much does he sell it for?
And that was you.
Bailey.
£25.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 800.
He does buy it for £25.
Oh, Emma. Love you.
What does he sell it for, James?
£199.
Correct. So,
screw Blockbusters.
James is on two, Bailey's on one, Ed's on
come
one.
On.
Question three. What is the name of the woman that Rodney had been seeing that Mickey Pierce was trying to pull, as mentioned, throughout the episode?
Janice. Bailey.
No, it's handed over to either one of these two. First to buzz in. Anyone going to buzz in?
I have no idea.
Hang on. It's on the end of my brain there.
Again, I'll have to give you a few seconds before you've all got it wrong.
Hey, there's nothing in the rule book about clues.
Did you say Joyce?
Can't tell you.
Okay.
Go, Emma. Love you.
Joyce? No.
Go, Emma.
Sorry, let me scratch that.
The answer was Monica.
Oh.
Question four.
Monica's not got fat thighs.
Exactly. Question four. What are the names of the two women that Del and Ronnie pull in the club?
Sorry, Delmar.
Ed?
That would be Nikki and Michelle.
Nice one.
Very good.
Now, this is 2-1-1. James, just get this one to win. If either of these two get it, it's a draw.
Have you got a tiebreaker?
We'll have a tiebreaker.
Hang on, let me get my buzzer keeps disappearing.
Get your buzzer ready, guys, okay? Right, here we go. Question five. After telling the girls that Rodney was a star tennis player and Dale was his manager, what did Dale go on to say they really did for a living?
God, that's difficult.
Sorry, Dale.
Ed.
Oh, no.
Concord pilots.
Correct.
Yes.
Oh,
Ed.
I can't believe
right,
it.
Right. So that is 2 points each.
Bravo.
Now, there needs to be a tiebreaker question. Cut. I need to think of one. Okay. This is the bonus question. First to buzz in. Yeah, gets it correct.
Not you. Not you, Bailey.
Why not me?
This is a tiebreaker, isn't it? Between
you were on two. Oh, you already only got one, didn't you?
Yeah.
How can we all be on two when there's. That'd be 6 questions.
Two, two, one.
Yeah.
I got one. This has gone well.
Even
I wait for the complaints on this one to flood in.
This is the tiebreaker.
Right.
Okay.
We'll do a bonus episode to clear this up.
I was going to say, right, just cut that bit out, surely.
Yeah, I know, but it's because I said you all got 2 each.
I've got a bit more confused. Now, so
I was correcting myself.
Yeah, wait a minute.
Okay.
You've got the week off work.
Yeah, just a bit more.
Bonus. Tiebreak question. Okay, tiebreak question.
God.
What is the name of the actor who plays the Aussie?
Go, Emma. Love you.
James.
Nick Stringer.
That's correct.
Yes, come on.
We got in there just before me.
Look at that.
So the series is 1 each to Bailey and James, Ed on 0. But Ed, I've got full faith in you in the next episode.
At some point, Ed, you're going
to... I got some catching up to do. I'm hanging my head in shame here.
Well, that's it.
what an episode it's been. Thank you so much to Sue Holderness for coming on our podcast. She's in Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs at the Mansfield Palace Theatre from the 1st of December to the 6th of January. Tickets are on sale. Go onto their website, mansfieldpalacetheatre.ticketsolve.com. She's also on Still Open All Hours, Season 5, playing Mrs. Rossi. It's on Sunday night, 8:30. Give that a listen.
Thank you, everyone, for your reviews on Facebook and all your followers on Twitter. Stay tuned for future Jolly Boys podcast episodes where we've got one more confirmed Only Fools and Horses guest.
One more?
That's mental.
How did we get that?
I can't tell you who it is. You're going to have to keep an eye on our social media pages, and the podcast should be with you soon.
In all along, you two have been sighing me in my gripes.
We got some half-price crack dice and miles of carpet tiles. TVs, deep freezing, David Bowie LPs, ball games, gold chains.